Kofi Kingston is no longer WWE Champion. The Rock lays the SmackDown, and Kane Velasquez confronts Brock Lesnar. Your full SmackDown review starts right after this. All right, so we're going to get right back to the WWE podcast in a second, but I just want to talk quickly about a product I recently came across, and it's called Mirex, M-I-R-R-E-X. So for you guys out there, you may want to direct your female counterpart to this website. It's pretty cool. It's a makeup mirror, but it's much more than that. The company is based in Colorado, and just so you guys know, Mirex stands for the Innovative Mirror. They're here to improve the lifestyle of individuals, and they want to take a step into the future, and that they have. They have taken the makeup mirror and turned it into a smart makeup mirror. So what's this going to do? It's going to change the way the mirrors are used. There are three levels of LED light for those last-minute face checks, and you can even charge your phone wirelessly. It also has an attachment to take that really cool, well-lighted selfie. So you guys really got to check this out. This is really, I've never seen anything like this. It's Mirex.store, M-I-R-R-E-X.store. That's M-I-R-R-E-X.store. This is definitely one of the coolest things that I've seen, and it would make a great gift. So check out Mirex.store today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this Saturday, October 5th, 2019. Yeah, it's a Saturday. I was going to keep my current schedule, but with Fox on Fridays now, it just makes sense to move things to Saturday rather than wait a day and have a delayed reaction on Sunday. So Saturday is going to be my new Thursday, right? So now you will hear me on Saturday with my reactions to SmackDown from Friday. And boy, what a big show. Today I had Anthony DeMarco, one of our co-hosts on the show, run through the card with me, run through the Hell in a Cell predictions, and of course, all the thoughts on The Rock returning, giving a rock bottom to Corbin, Kane Velasquez coming in, the big surprise there, Kofi Kingston losing in 9 seconds to Brock Lesnar, all that kind of stuff, and we really laid it on thick with some of our opinions, and some very interesting opinions too as we talk about Hell in a Cell, which is tomorrow. Or today, if you're listening on a Sunday. But so we really run up and down the card, and I always enjoy talking with him, and always a blast. So, guys, check out the website, wwepodcast.com, or if you want no ads, you just like, oh my God, I can't take the ads. Well, here's an easy way to do it, real easy fix. You go to patreon.com/wwepodcast, and there you can get all these shows completely ad-free for your listening experience. And you also get exclusive video content and a lot of other cool stuff, a shout out on the show and so forth. So I'd really recommend you check it out on Patreon, or you can just listen to me as you always do for free and head on over to Apple or Google or Spotify or Spreaker or iHeartRadio, and this show will be there and waiting for you to download. So definitely check that out. And if you have a moment, give me a rating and review. Always helps me out. I know I say that every time, but it really does. So, all right. Well, guys, at the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. There really isn't anything better, right? Sunday comes along where you got to go to work Monday, but football's always there for you, right? They're that like best friend that comes with you on Sunday. They're always there. There's just nothing like the NFL. And there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So how do you do that? You go to mybookie.ag. Easy, right? Mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. All you have to do is head to mybookie.ag. Just do the smart thing. If you're going to bet on football this season, just bet with mybookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, just try a parlay. If all of your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year to bet, hands down. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Just use promo code WWE to activate the offer. That's promo code WWE to activate that offer of doubling your deposit. go visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. Okay, welcome to the WWE Podcast. And right now, I've got Anthony DeMarco with me. And it's a Saturday. And why is it a Saturday? Well, last night, SmackDown had its debut on Fox. And it was a hell of a show. Not without some flaws, but we'll get into that. We're going to get into the Hell in a Cell predictions for tomorrow night. So, Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back. How's everyone doing tonight?
Yeah, well, I think the general feeling of how people are doing is relatively good based on the receptions I've seen from SmackDown. Certainly noteworthy, star power everywhere, and that seemed to be the theme of the show. Lots of ways that we could lead off here. I mean, we could talk about The Rock. We could talk about Kofi Kingston losing in 9 seconds, which made me so happy to see. I mean, people are losing their minds over that. And, of course, the Kane Velasquez debut. So, I mean, honestly, I don't even know where to start. I'm going to let you pick the subject, and we'll go.
Well, I'll start with The Rock. You know, I was the biggest Rock fan growing up, so it was really cool to see him back. It really shows that he hasn't missed a beat at all in terms of his vocabulary and his insults. He picked up right where he left off. I could have done without the Becky Lynch, you know, interfering with his punchlines of like, it doesn't matter what you think. And I found that, you know, the fact that they just beat up Baron Corbin was a bit cheesy, but all in all, I'll just take it for what it was. It was great seeing The Rock back. I jumped up and down like a little kid when his music hit. And like for me, I just got my full kick of nostalgia with that return.
It was certainly nostalgic. I loved it. It felt special because The Rock hasn't been on WWE TV in a couple of years now. And it was always great to see him. He looks awesome. He, you know, as you said, he hasn't missed a beat. And his delivery, I don't care if he scripted it. I'm sure he did backstage and thought of his own lines and had help. And that, I don't care. He delivered it awesome. Yeah, him beating down Baron Corbin, I'm fine with it. They needed to have a heel out there to beat up on. But now he also kind of devalued. Again, this is a very small nitpick thing. I enjoyed the segment overall, but the nitpick would be, hey, they kind of just built up this King of the Ring tournament to mean something and actually have it be a launching pad for a heel. And Baron Corbin has done a great job with it, and they kill it in, you know, the matter of a couple of minutes. But I'm sure Corbin will have time to build it back up, but it was certainly enjoyable to see the Rock Bottom, the People's Elbow. As you said, I could have done without Becky, you know, playing sing-along to the Big Brother. It was kind of that dynamic that was kind of like, I don't know. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't like – it wasn't perfection, as I would say, but overall, yeah, I enjoyed the segment. It was what it was. It gave the fans what they wanted, and I was sitting at home cheering too, like, you know, I was 12 years old seeing wrestling for the first time.
Yeah, and like the fact that they gave Corbin the ring to share with The Rock shows just how much management probably thinks of Baron Corbin. And, you know, The Rock is just, you can throw him in any scenario and he'll get his way through it and turn it into gold. And it's just what he's done his whole career and how he got popular in the first place with the Nation of Domination. I don't know if this has anything to do with it or if it'll go anywhere, but I saw that Randy Orton gave him a chirp over Twitter. Hopefully, maybe that could be a retirement match for The Rock down the road. You know, he still isn't in the Hall of Fame. And I know that report came out a few weeks ago or a few months ago, rather, that he quietly retired from wrestling. But until he's in the Hall of Fame, I will still leave that door open and maybe just a final farewell match. But, you know, all in all, like, just seeing The Rock on center stage on SmackDown, the show that he basically named, was just absolutely phenomenal.
It was, and I did see that tweet too with Randy Orton, and I was thinking, you know, but Bray Wyatt did the same thing when Stone Cold was coming to Raw and nothing came of it. So I was kind of, you know, one eye on it, one eye going, I don't know. I would love to see it. And there is history there. I mean, I remember when The Rock and Mick Foley faced Evolution, or I'm sorry, The Rock and Mick Foley faced, yeah, it was Evolution with Randy Orton and Triple H and, or Batista and Ric Flair. And they ended up actually losing that match at WrestleMania that year. I think it was WrestleMania 20. So, yeah, it was, there is some history there. I would like to see a one-on-one program with these two if and when it happens. Of course, if The Rock ever has his one last match, just as if Austin ever does, there's tons of candidates as far as, well, Actually, the candidate pool is pretty slim, I should say. Brock Lesnar, to me, would be at the very top of that list. I've said that forever. That should be Rock Brock. That's nothing new. But, yeah, Randy Orton, certainly. I think they could have a hell of a match. Two veterans in the ring. Randy Orton is as smooth as butter in the ring. That could be a program that I could get behind, you know, in the blink of an eye. But, yeah, I mean, beyond the Rock segment, though, I did, there was rumors swirling about Cain Velasquez, right? There were rumors swirling about a week or so ago about Cain Velasquez and him getting into pro wrestling and possibly making his debut on Fox. And we saw him come out, get in the ring with Brock Lesnar. We'll get to the Kofi thing in a minute too, but with Brock Lesnar standing there, for the first time seeing fear in his eyes or seeing shock in his eyes, and Michael Cole pointed that out very nicely because that is the first time I've ever seen that, at least that I can remember, and having Kane come out there and, you know, lay a quick beating on Brock before he retreats, that was certainly interesting. What did you think about this?
It was a cool angle. Like, Brock's reaction, I feel like, made the whole segment. I feel like you mentioned, like Michael Cole pointed out, that like we've never really seen that reaction from Brock, seeing like a blast from the past, like another real cage fighter come out. I don't want to nitpick here and be judgmental maybe, but Cain Velasquez, maybe his body made it less intimidating for me. Like, I had a friend over when we were watching SmackDown who's a crazy UFC guy. And he was just like, well, you know, Cain Velasquez is pretty beat up and he's past his prime. And like, you know, you could tell he wasn't in the best shape and he had that massive knee brace on. So for me, staring at Brock across the ring from him, who's just like a mountain of a man, it kind of hurt the credibility of the segment. But besides that, I think it's a cool angle. It's a different angle for WWE. And certainly Brock's reaction made it feel really real in terms of the fear in his eyes.
It did. And like Brock's reaction, like you said, it's a good way to put it. Brock's reaction is what sold the whole thing. Because as you said, when I saw Cain Velasquez, I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. Because if you weren't, I was going to. about his body. I mean, look, you know, he is a legitimate badass. But boy, if you didn't know who he was, you would look at him and go, What just happened to Brock from this guy? I mean, if you didn't know about Cain Velasquez, looking just on the surface of what he looks like, it just wasn't a good visual for Brock to get beat up by a guy that kind of looks very pedestrian when he takes his shirt off. Like, I'm sorry, he just doesn't look intimidating other than his, you know, he's got a very good gaze. He's got his eyes are very mean looking. That's just, I think, naturally the way he was created. And that's always a great thing to have. But in terms of muscle, you know, tone and body fat, not a great ratio there. And that would be the only thing that I, too, have a little bit of a setback for me in terms of going, really, Brock? This guy beat you?
Yeah, and again, like, I don't want to nitpick and be judgmental. I know it's 2019 and like it's not nice to say these things, but it's pro wrestling and Brock is as physically intimidating as they come. And then a guy who pretty much looks like an average day Joe, who lifts weights sparingly, who has this massive knee brace, comes in and whoops his ass. Like, I don't know, like, I'm trying not to read too much into it. I'm trying to suspend my belief a bit, but it definitely hurt the credibility of the segment in my eyes, because come on, like it doesn't take a genius to like look at the two of them and see who would maybe like win in a physical altercation between the two. And again, I watch UFC very occasionally. I tune in for the big fights here and there. So I don't know a whole lot about Cain Velasquez. But just from what I've heard is that his long days have long passed him by. Not his long days, his glory days have long passed him by. So maybe just that kind of hurt the whole segment as a whole. But in terms of where they're going with it, I'm interested. It piqued my interest enough. But again, I think Brock just had a lot to do with that.
He did. He did. And I think what would have just helped it is just keep a shirt on, bro. I mean, like, you know, I mean, seriously, like if he just kept a shirt on, I think that would have really just taken away that negative, because you can work on your body at the gym. You know, he's not cage fighting anymore. you can do things to bulk up and to tone yourself down. So keep a shirt on until you do. I just think there was no need for him to come out shirtless. And I'm surprised that Vince McMahon okayed it when he's all about the look a lot of times and all about the presentation. For that to happen, I was kind of like, really, Vince, you let this go? I mean, he couldn't have just thrown a shirt on him and said, you know, hey, when it's time to go and you get yourself in shape in a few months, assuming they have a match, and clearly they are somewhere down the line, then you can, you know, take your shirt off and we can go from there. But yeah, so again, I mean, I think we're on the same page there that it just wasn't a good visual. At the same time, let me ask you, when do you think that these two are going to lock up for an official match?
Well, I've read rumors online that it's going to be a Crown Jewel later this month. I'm not sure if it's going to be for the title or anything of that capacity, but that's what seems to be the rumor as of now. I guess it's an okay first opponent for Brock. I'm not really sure how they're going to go about it, if they're going to have a special stipulation, given that they both come from UFC cage fighting. But my interest, to be honest, is at a minimal, because anyone who's, you know, been somewhat in touch with UFC has, you know, been there, done that with these two. But yeah, I would expect it to be a Crown Jewel given the timing of his debut and the rumors that I've seen online.
Crown Jewel. Every time I hear Crown Jewel, I'm just, you know, I just think of last year. It's got such a dark cloud hanging over it from all of the controversy last year and everything else that goes with it. But yeah, if it is Crown Jewel, honestly, I'll be a little bit disappointed in that, because I don't think, I mean, I haven't been following Cain Velasquez very closely with his pro wrestling training, but Brock Lesnar is naturally gifted inside the ring, and he's safe. He's a beast. He has a presence in the ring. He has good timing. He's just a gifted athlete. And I don't know if Cain Velasquez, I would assume that if WWE allowed him to be on programming on television, that they have given the green light to that, hey, this guy is at least got the fundamentals down with Brock. And Brock's matches, you know, last, well, these days, 9 seconds. So we'll talk about that next. But yeah, I hope it's not a Crown Jewel. I don't need these special events to take place at Crown Jewel. Crown Jewel, to me, anytime they go to Saudi Arabia, it's almost like going to the UK for Raw. It's like that show doesn't really matter. It's like, it's just, I hate to say it, but it's a glorified, overpaid, blood money house show. That's what going to Saudi Arabia is, and I'll watch it. I'm not going to protest watching it. At the same time, I just can't take Crown Jewel and Saudi Arabia events seriously for one reason or another. I think this could be something built to WrestleMania, if that's the way they're going. I hope they don't just, you know, blow this in one shot in a month at Crown Jewel. So that's my thought.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, even when they did the Super Showdown in Australia and they had Triple H versus The Undertaker last time ever, or the last Crown Jewel where they did Triple H versus Randy Orton, or DX versus the Brothers of Destruction. It just seems like a show where they throw as much star power humanly possible into there with no storyline incorporated and hope it sticks, just for the strict viewership and attendance of that particular show. I think they have something here where, as I just said, I'm not particularly interested with, but they could build it into something to WrestleMania or even a Royal Rumble down the road, because they have some actual history to build on. If it is Crown Jewel, I wouldn't enjoy it, but it probably wouldn't shock me in terms of just like the viewership that they would get from the occasional fan, maybe just the everyday UFC fan who wants their last, you know, fill of Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez. But I truly would not be shocked if they just go for it here and then just book them for Crown Jewel.
I wouldn't either. And look, I'll watch it. I'm not going to be down on it until I see exactly what Cain Velasquez has. And you know, like I said earlier, with Kofi Kingston getting defeated in 9 seconds and Brock's average length of a match over the last couple of years is, you know, under 2 minutes, and that's not an exaggeration, I don't know if Cain would have to really have crazy amount of cardio. He doesn't have to have, you know, a really necessarily in-ring psychology for a match that would normally be 5 to 10 to 15 minutes. So if he's limited in the ring, you can hide his weaknesses by the length of the match, and that fits perfectly with Brock's style of matches. So moving into Kofi Kingston, Man, I think we can both stand up and shout from the rooftop that, alleluia, Kofi Kingston's reign is over. We can stop with the pancakes. We can stop with the very vanilla promos. We can stop with all of the nonsensical, childish crap that the New Day has been doing. It is a new day, yes it is, with Brock Lesnar as WWE Champion in just 9 seconds. So what did you think, not just of Brock's win, but how long it took, and just the whole thing in general?
Well, I just mentioned to open the show that I jumped up and down when The Rock's music hit. I probably did the exact same, if not more, when Brock beat Kofi in 9 seconds. It made so much sense for this to happen. Brock is a multi-time champion on multiple platforms in terms of combat sports, whether it be NCAA wrestling, WWE, UFC. And Kofi was a decade-long, maybe not jobber, but lower mid-card guy. And it made so much sense that he made short work of him in 9 seconds. I'm so happy we're done with Kofi. I'm happy that it's back on a legit champion, and I'm happy that they did not even let Kofi get a bit of offense in, because that's what would be a realistic outcome. In a simulated sport, you want to try and make it as realistic as possible, and in a real fight, this is most likely what would happen. I was personally expecting a John Cena-Lesnar-esque match where, like, Brock takes him to the woodshed and suplexes him 10 to 15 times and then ends him. But the fact that he beat him with one single move in under 10 seconds and just made short work of him just made it that much more believable, and in my opinion, that much more credible. So I'm just so happy. I think WWE aced this booking, and I'm just so glad that we could finally be rid of Kofi's title run.
Honestly, amen. I mean, I'm done with it. I think I've been done with it for 4 months now. I gave it a chance, and I was over it after he just did not take anything seriously and started with the pancakes, hiding behind the championship, and got buried in SmackDown, and he was the forgotten champion of the championship that has the most lineage and the most respect out of all the championships in WWE, and he took it down. He took it down a peg or two or three, and now it's back where it belongs, and people are pissed. People are, I mean, I'm telling you, like, I've got some feedback from people who are angry about the way WWE booked this match, and they're not so mad that Kofi lost. I guess it's how quickly he lost that people are pissed off about. But you got to think about it this way, folks. If WWE wants to legitimize Brock Lesnar on the very first episode of their biggest TV deal in the history of the company, worth billions of dollars, and you want Brock Lesnar to come out there, and Fox, which is the biggest sports network in America, you want WWE to put their best foot forward and get the most eyeballs on a guy that you possibly can, and make the match the most realistic that it can be, yes, Brock Lesnar should beat Kofi Kingston that quickly. And it makes not only the F5 more legitimized, because we didn't have a kick out, it was one F5 and it was over. There wasn't, well, oh, Kofi kicked out, he's got to do it again and again and again. It was one. I like that it wasn't multiple that he had to do. That is always a point to me, because a finisher should be exactly that, a finish. And too much today that happens regularly on television is people kicking out and kicking out and kicking out for false finishes. I like the fact that they make the F5 a money finish. It ended Kofi instantly. That was great. And it also makes Brock Lesnar's next opponent that much more intriguing, because Brock Lesnar was that dominant. So, assuming it's Cain Velasquez, I do not see him becoming WWE champion. That would make zero sense. But whoever's Brock's next long-term opponent that can, you know, maybe make it feel viable, make it feel realistic that maybe they could pull this off against Brock, that to me is more intriguing than Cain Velasquez as WWE champion, because that would be a huge mistake.
Yeah, I don't understand people who are actually upset about the way Kofi lost. I just don't think they understand wrestling psychology. What I liked about this so much is that it reestablished the hierarchy in wrestling. And it's like that way in all of sports. We've talked about this before. Like, it would make no sense for the New England Patriots to suddenly be losing to, I don't know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or what have you. And this was just something that really brought wrestling back down to a realistic level. There wasn't a back and forth that like we're so accustomed to seeing nowadays in wrestling matches. It was just a legitimate, realistic match where the much better wrestler ended the worst one in short and quick fashion. I don't see the problem with that. I saw people saying, well, we saw Seth Rollins get like two victories over Brock, and even when he lost, he kicked out. Well, why does Seth Rollins have to be on equal footing with Kofi? Seth Rollins was a hierarchy superstar right out of the gate as soon as he left the Shield, while Kofi was, like we've mentioned, a lower mid-card guy for almost 10 years before this miraculous run that he had leading up to WrestleMania. So I just don't see how anyone is upset with this. I've seen the feedback that you've gotten as well, but I just cannot be happier with what WWE did here to reestablish the WWE Championship and to reestablish the hierarchy in the wrestling business as a whole.
I give them a ton of credit. I give them all the credit in the world. I'm glad that WWE did this and said, not only is Kofi's reign going to end tonight, it's going to end before you can blink an eye. And I respect the hell out of that because they went with what should have been done. Not just Brock Lesnar winning, but Brock Lesnar winning quickly and decisively. That is Brock Lesnar. And that's what pisses people off and makes him a heel to some people, that he tries to end the match. Well, think about this. If you are in any actual real competitive sport, why would you let your opponent just hang in there and hang in there and hang in there to put on a good performance instead of actually being concerned about winning the damn match or game or whatever you're doing in a one-on-one or team sport? I mean, that's just what you do. You try to finish the person as quickly as you can, or the opponent as quickly as you can. And that's what Brock did. And Brock's not getting paid by the hour. That's pretty damn clear. I enjoyed this. This was the right move. It was almost as if Kofi wasn't a contender. He was a pretender. That's what Kofi has been for the last, what are we, 6 months now? So the fans who loved him and loved the reign and all the stupid silliness that was the entertainment part of being a champion, which was awful, have gotten their fill. And I hope you enjoyed it because I don't see Kofi becoming WWE champion probably, and I would say in the next year or so, maybe ever again. This could be Kofi's one and only reign as champion.
Well, it should be. And you look at the guys that he defeated. Kevin Owens has never held the WWE Championship. Dolph Ziggler has never held the WWE Championship. Randy Orton, multi-time WWE Champion, but everyone knows that he is well past his prime and is basically just there to put guys over or do nostalgic type matches. So there was never real contender that we thought was a legitimate threat to Kofi's reign. And I enjoyed the fact that the first legit threat who came along put him to bed. And that was it. And it was over and they ended it. Because, as you just mentioned, SmackDown has always been predominantly not about the WWE Championship since WrestleMania. And that is not what it should be. It's the most prestigious title with the most lineage in WWE. The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, Hulk Hogan, the list goes on and on and on. And to have a guy dancing around pretending like it's no big deal to hold this belt means that it lowers the prestigiousness of the title. I just cannot say enough of how much I've been so turned off about this run of Kofi. And it even goes to show who his challengers were. Like, look at Dolph. He's back challenging for the tag team titles. And even Kevin, I love Kevin Owens, but he was not a legitimate threat. They never really took Kofi seriously. And the first serious contender who came along took him out. And if people can't see that, then I don't really think that you understand the psychology of the wrestling industry.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think people are just are knee-jerk reacting here and saying, oh, I've actually had people say it's disrespectful. I'm sitting here going, do you have any idea how wrestling works? Like, you have no idea. Some people are trying to make it a racial issue. Some people, it's like, look, WWE did what is best for business. I know that's a slogan they use sometimes. I know that that's what the authority used to say, but it is true. That's what they do. Kofi as champion wasn't exactly killing it in the ratings. Brock Lesnar as champion will kill it in the ratings. And from everything I'm hearing, Brock Lesnar will also be getting additional dates for SmackDown appearances, as they should. That Brock Lesnar is a guy that I don't want to see necessarily every week, and I'm fine with that. I just don't want him showing up once every 3-4 months. That's a little bit too much. So something in between, maybe a couple times a month. I'm fine with that. It makes it feel special. It brings prestige back to the championship, and you can have opponents who are there on a weekly basis trash-talking Brock or building heat or whatever it may be. Clearly, it's got to be a babyface if Brock Lesnar is established as a heel, and that's the role that he's playing right now. So, once he gets through this thing with Cain Velasquez, assuming it's at Crown Jewel and he moves on to his real next opponent, I'll be interested to see what that is. A couple other things I want to talk about for SmackDown. I almost said SmackDown Live out of muscle memory, but is Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon, and The Fiend coming up to show and doing what he does every single time that Seth is there, and that stick his fingers down his throat as Seth does not know the rules of a horror movie and look behind you every single week. So Seth gets put down by The Fiend, and Kevin Owens finally just vanquishes Shane McMahon, hopefully into oblivion. What are your thoughts on both of these things?
Well, Kevin Owens and Shane, I actually enjoyed the match. I thought it was short and sweet. We rarely see that from Shane McMahon matches. It seems like they drag on a lot. And I'm a big Shane McMahon fan. So I'm hoping that he's not gone forever. I'm hoping maybe on a personal level he just wanted to take a leave of absence. But I'm happy that the storyline is finally put to bed. I'm happy that the match was just well executed and not too drawn out. So A plus there for Shane versus KO. As for Seth and The Fiend, you know, I love The Fiend. I think they've done a very good job with this, but his attacks on Seth are slowly getting a bit repetitive and redundant, like you just mentioned. Like, do you really need it drawn out for you? Like, you know what's going to happen. Like, how are you constantly getting one up by this guy? But I'm trying to kind of suspend my disbelief here a little bit. But aside from that, I think that they've done a pretty good job here, but it is getting a bit repetitive, and I hope they kind of rectify that post Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, they're starting to teeter on, as you just said, kind of like, okay, well, we've seen this before. You know, can we do something a little different? And it's the same setup every time, too. It's Seth sitting there like he sees the boogeyman, and he can't actually, you know, have any kind of defense against this move. I mean, there's nothing that Seth can do with all of his moves and diverse offense. He can't do anything to The Fiend. Look, we all love The Fiend. I still love The Fiend, but they are starting to flirt with repetitiveness and predictability, and Seth looking like an idiot for really falling for this week after week after week. So I'm ready for their Hell in a Cell match, and so we'll get to that in a minute too. But my thoughts on Kevin Owens and Shane, I thought that this match, this whole storyline has been mismanaged. I think that's why a lot of people are tired of it. Not necessarily that they don't have good chemistry. It's that this whole storyline has been totally mismanaged from the get-go of really congruity and making Kevin Owens look like a fool and a coward and cowering to Shane when he did the fine to him. I just think that Kevin Owens was damaged from this storyline, but all's well that ends well, as they say, and Kevin Owens winning was the only thing you could do. The only thing. I actually almost even put real money. I actually was going to throw $100 on this match, like real money, not funny money, on this to say that Kevin Owens was going to win. There was nothing WWE could do other than this outcome, and it was the right outcome. He stunned him at the end. That was nice to see. And I just don't know if Shane McMahon is gone for good. I would assume no, based on WWE's history of following through on match stipulations, as extreme as they may be. I definitely suspect that we will see Shane McMahon in WWE sooner, honestly, rather than later.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest problem with Shane and KO is that we saw it 2 years ago. Now, I understand the roles were reversed and KO was the heel and Shane was the face, but we saw them have a feud that was drawn out from basically October all the way to WrestleMania. So I think that right off the bat with this new rebooted storyline where KO was the face, they were kind of behind the eight ball in that respect. You know, because it was so drawn out, their initial storyline was basically overdone and overblown. So I kind of feel like people were fed up with it quicker than they would have been if it was completely fresh. Like you mentioned, I don't think that Shane is done for good, but I think it'd be a safe bet to say that he's done till at least post Royal Rumble / WrestleMania.
I think that's a safe bet. And, you know, I would say we would see, you know, I guess the over-under would probably be WrestleMania. Do we see Shane McMahon before WrestleMania? I would say probably. WWE just can't help themselves, especially when it comes to a McMahon on TV. I think Shane McMahon, one way or the other, comes back, and they could do the old Stone Cold stipulation back from 1999 when Austin, in the contract it was written, Austin was the only one who could bring Vince back. Well, maybe Kevin Owens is in a situation in the next few months that warrants him bringing back Shane McMahon, and it was written in the contract he's the only one that can do it. And so that would be a reason and how they could bring him back. All these, you know, just mythical and invisible contract terms. So that's probably how they do it.
Yeah, and I think they did that story with the John Cena and the Authority in 2014. So there's many avenues that they could go down with this. I'm just happy that they're finally going to put this to bed. Maybe they bring back Shane in a different role, like maybe not just the heel Authority figure, even though I've really enjoyed him in that role as a whole. But I think more so than anything else, I'm just happy to see KO go on to bigger and better things. You know, he's a former Universal Champion, U.S. Champion, Intercontinental Champion. It's about time he gets back in that scene, even if it's just, you know, say, challenging Shinsuke Nakamura for the Intercontinental Championship. Just something different and something more of substance. I'd like to see him back in some title picture, even if it is a lower card belt. But I think he just has to move on from this particular program.
Oh, yeah. He has some repair to do on his character after this whole storyline. Like I said, Kevin Owens was badly damaged from it, and I think it's time to repair. I don't think it's unrepairable or irreversible. They did right at SmackDown last night, and they just need to continue to build it and have him in a program with a real wrestler. So, but speaking of Hell in a Cell and talking about The Fiend, let's just start right here. I want to start with the Universal Championship of Seth Rollins and The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, inside the cell. So I'm going to toss it to you on your predictions for this.
Man, this one's hard. Because on one hand, I can't see them having Seth drop the belt. But on the other hand, I can't see them halting The Fiend's momentum here. So I'm probably going to go with The Fiend winning, to be honest. I'm probably wrong here. And probably I'm thinking with my heart more than my head, but I'm actually going to say that The Fiend's going to win here, and I think he's going to take the belt, and Seth is going to begin the long chase back towards WrestleMania. I just think that you can't have an outcome where The Fiend looks subservient in any way, even if that is an outside altercation from, let's say, a Braun Strowman or what have you. But I've thought about this for a couple of days now leading up to our show here, and I just really think that they're going to pull the trigger and put the belt on The Fiend.
I will say, for the longest time that I did not think there was a chance that Bray Wyatt was going to be champion at the end of this match, because I was thinking it's too soon. They need to have a few programs before he gets the belt. But the more I think about it, the more that I think about this season premiere, everything's starting fresh. They have a new set. They have a new home on Fox with the biggest TV deal ever. A new set on SmackDown. A shakeup of the draft. The more I think about this over and over and over, the more I think about The Fiend is probably going to win this match. Yes, Seth Rollins just conquered a monster. He just slayed a beast. All these, you know, cool sayings they come up with. I don't think he's going to slay The Fiend here. I see Bray Wyatt winning. And originally my prediction was that Braun Strowman was going to interfere in a 1997 Kane-esque type of way and tear a hole in the side of the cell, or maybe even rip the door off the hinges and come in and lay waste to Bray Wyatt and have Seth crawl his body over there, and or maybe even have Strowman put Seth on top of The Fiend and have Seth win that way. Or it would end in a no contest where both men are knocked out and the match can't continue. Some kind of weird thing like that. But I would see Braun Strowman somehow, some way in that match. The more I talk about it, the more you talk about it. I think it may be the right time with their season premiere and all the stars aligning and AEW pressure and all that kind of thing. I think it might be time to put it on The Fiend. And I think that the people are ready. This character is the most over thing that they have. So I can't believe I'm saying it. I never thought I would a few weeks ago, but I think The Fiend comes out champion.
You know, because it's right that time of year where they start preparing for WrestleMania and Royal Rumble, and it's not that far away. We're, what, 2-3 months away? And I just think that it's the right time to pull the trigger. Like you said, they're starting fresh. They're going to have the new draft coming up pretty soon. And it would just be the opportune time here, because even if you make Braun Strowman interfere and it doesn't end clean, you're still going to hurt The Fiend's credibility in some capacity. And that's where I feel as though they can't risk it, because they've done such a masterful job here, like capitalizing on The Fiend's dominance over pretty much anyone he's come across. And even if he was scared off by Braun Strowman, it would hurt his credibility a little bit. So I think just taking everything into consideration, The Fiend will come up with the victory here, and Seth will start his long road back to recovery like they do always at this time of year leading up to WrestleMania.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, Seth feels a little like Kofi of when he's champion. It's just not that interesting with him as champion. And Seth is an amazing performer. I believe he should be in the top card. It's not like Kofi's dynamic where he's just, he's a mid-card guy, and that's just what he is, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Seth does feel like he's a top guy, and I respect the hell out of him, and he's an amazing performer, but he's not that interesting as champion. He's just not. I just look at him as he's holding the belt. I'm like, well, cool, but I don't feel a lot when I see him with the Universal Championship. Seeing The Fiend with that belt, I think, is just marketing waiting to happen for WWE. I think the fans would cheer the hell out of it, even though he's positioned as a heel. He probably will be transitioned into a babyface and probably go right into a program with Braun Strowman. Even if Strowman interferes and he gives, say, Braun the Braun gives Bray the power slam, and maybe the lights go out and, you know, Bray's gone, and then the lights come back up and Bray's back on his feet. Something like that. Something weird's going to happen where Braun will put him down. People will probably boo, and then his superpowers will take over, and Bray will, you know, I don't know, Hulk up or supercharge himself or whatever he does with his powers, and ultimately defeat Seth Rollins. So I see something like that, but just Seth doesn't feel interesting to me as champion.
Yeah, like, I'm with you with Seth, where he does 100% deserve to be there, and you cannot take that away from him, but he just feels a very John Cena-esque right now, where he can overcome anyone at any time, and if there's a deserving opponent, he wants to give them the chance, and I'm just very disconnected from his character, where it's like, come on, man. Like, I talked about it the last time I was on the show leading up to Clash of Champions, where he voluntarily offered his title opportunity up to Braun Strowman. I was just like, really? I don't care how good of a guy you are. You're not volunteering yourself to fight a 385-pound dude. But maybe for that, I've been disconnected with Seth, and not because I don't think he's a great wrestler. I think he's as good as they come. But I'm with you there. I feel like Seth is getting a bit stale. And to be honest, I think that even though the crowd is super behind Seth, they wouldn't be that opposed to having the Fiend taking the belt off of them.
I think the fans are ready. I think that's ultimately what matters is people like Seth, but people love the Fiend. I have not heard anyone boo the Fiend. I'm serious. I really have not heard any negative reaction for the Fiend. I don't care what babyface he's attacked, how he's done it, how vile he's supposed to be, this evil character. People love this because he's too damn cool. He's too cool to be heel. I don't care what they try to position him as. That's just a fact. So, all right. Well, we could talk about this match forever, and I'm fascinated by the outcome of this. But moving down the line here to the Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks Raw Women's Championship, the second match that is actually taking place in Hell in a Cell. Who do you have going over here, and why?
I'm going to go with Sasha. I know I went with her for Clash of Champions and it didn't work out, but kind of for the same reason as why I think that Seth is going to drop it. I think that Becky is stale as champion, and I think it's just that time to position as a heel as champion to lead into Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season. And not for anything, but I think that Sasha Banks is the best possible candidate to take that into this time as a heel champion, because I don't think that the women's division is especially deep right now. I think it's basically Becky, Sasha, Charlotte, and Bayley, and the aforementioned latter two are on SmackDown, at least for the time being before the draft. So I just think in terms of the timing and who WWE has to, you know, fulfill this role, Sasha's just the prime candidate to do it. So yeah, I'm going with Sasha here.
Yeah, Sasha is an interesting choice. Sasha, I have been back and forth on this one because the further away we get from WrestleMania, the more that, and just odds are, that the champion's going to drop their belt. And I said it last pay-per-view, as you said, that Sasha is the right person. And I think she was actually hotter at Clash of Champions than she is now. So for her to drop it to Sasha now, I think, well, I'm fine with it. I actually want to see a heel Sasha as champion. But she doesn't seem like she has the momentum she did when she first came back. The problem was they took the mic away from her and they just had her come out there and be Bayley's buddy, who is Bayley. I don't even want to mention that name or I will go on a massive rant. I think that Sasha should be the one to win. Sasha should be the one to come out as champion here and come out here decisively as champion. Not a fluke win, but be that badass women's champion and have her feel like she's being reinvented or reinvigorated by the 4 months off that she had or whatever. She came back white hot and they kind of cooled her off, but this could be a way to get her back on track. Now, with all that said, I said that Sasha should be the one to win. I want Sasha to win here. It's the right move. I'm over Becky as champion. I think she's still great, but I think I'm ready for someone else to take the torch. All that being said, I still think Becky's going to come out here as champion. She will be, I think, the remaining person who comes from WrestleMania with the championship, and she will be the longest one to hold that belt out of the three. And I just think that it's going to be Becky going over here. Maybe with even after she wins, maybe there's a beatdown, or I don't know. I've heard rumors of NXT call-ups. You know, Shayna Baszler's one of them coming out at the end and beating down Becky. So, oh, now we know who her next opponent is, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I've heard of that. So maybe that's the way they go, where Sasha or Becky retains, but she gets, you know, laid to waste at the end. Again, I want Sasha to win. I just think it's going to be Becky.
Well, it's a safe choice because, you know, she got the rub from The Rock on SmackDown. So, you know, that they think very highly of her. I just feel as though that if they don't put the belt on Sasha here, like, it's a very big missed opportunity. And you are right 100% that coming off of from where she was a month ago, she isn't nearly as hot as she once was. I still think that she's done a good enough job to keep enough heat on her to carry that belt as a heel champion. But I would not be surprised one bit if Becky continues to hold the belt for this massive title run, just based on the rub that she got from The Rock on SmackDown.
I think that was a big clue that we got on SmackDown that, hey, Becky Lynch is standing in the ring with arguably one of the greatest of all time and getting the rub from The Rock. I think that was a big message sent and received by the WWE fans. So, look, my brain is saying Becky, my heart wants Sasha. And so I'm going to go with my brain, but not very confidently. If anybody out there is betting on this stuff, this would be a match I would stay the hell away from for any kind of actual real money. I will just say that. But moving down the line to the next match here, Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan versus Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. Your thoughts?
Okay, well, before we get into the match, Matt, I have to ask you, what do you think of Roman Reigns' Superman punch turning into pyro on SmackDown?
God. are you trying? You're trying, are you? You're poking the bear. First of all, let me just say it. The Superman punch is one of the most silly, ridiculous, awful-looking moves, and it looks very cool on a T-shirt of the silhouette of him about to deliver a Superman punch. It is such a cartoon video game move that he has as a signature move. I can't stand it. Not only I think the name of it is half of the reason I don't like it, because it's just stupid to call name yourself after Superman. I don't ever remember Superman even delivering that the way Roman Reigns does. That's the first thing. Number two, the Superman punch is one of the most obvious and forthcoming moves that you can see coming. If I see somebody jumping in the air, I either sidestep or duck. I don't just stand there. There is so much hang time with that move. I can't handle that move. And thirdly, it is a move that he delivers as often as you deliver a clothesline in a match. I can't this whole move set of Roman Reigns. Look, I think I like Roman Reigns as a character more than I have. Would I go to a show and cheer him like I'm 15-year-old girl just mesmerized by his hair and his blue eyes? No, I would not. I would still boo the hell out of him. But I respect him, and I think he's a good in-ring performer. But this Superman punch is something that it gets me so riled up because it's done so often. It looks terrible. It makes his opponents look stupid for standing there. And the name of it is something else. On top of the pyro, yeah, I need to take a breath.
Yeah, so I'm with you there verbatim on everything you said. So the match itself, I think that it's going to be a turn by Daniel Bryan. I think he's going to turn on Roman Reigns, and we're going to get the payoff to this long, drawn-out storyline, which I've actually been intrigued by, I'm not going to lie, with the wrinkle of Harper returning and Rowan actually pretty much impressing me with his mic skills. But I think it's going to be Daniel Bryan as the mastermind turning on Roman Reigns, and they're going to start a lengthy program. And they're probably going to do a Wyatt family-esque stable with Daniel Bryan at the head with Harper and Rowan behind him.
Yep. I mean, you took it exactly my thoughts here. And see, Daniel Bryan, he didn't quite turn babyface. Right now, he's in between roles. And when people are in between roles, look out. Because Daniel Bryan never brought back the yes chants. He just he's being cheered by the crowd by default of what the storyline is dictating, not because he suddenly loves the fans again and he's doing the yes thing. He's very much in between, which is danger for me, which tells me, yes, he is turning on Roman Reigns. This whole thing has been a very complex, very driven storyline to get Roman Reigns vulnerable and have these three beat the holy hell out of Roman Reigns. So I think that this match, I mean, honestly, it doesn't even matter who wins, because it's not about who wins this match. It's about when Daniel Bryan makes his turn, whether it's after Roman Reigns wins, or maybe it's before Roman Reigns wins when he's about to deliver the spear and Daniel Bryan comes out of nowhere with the knee. and then you see the turn. I think that's exactly how it goes down. The announcers go, what? And they act like, you know, they didn't see this coming. It's going to be people, you know, losing their minds, and it should be. I think that this could be an extremely good program with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns, and I would love, love, love to hear Daniel Bryan's explanation for this whole thing that he has been the mastermind from day one months ago when the crates fell on him at backstage at SmackDown. So I honestly, I don't even care who wins. To me, that's not about – and I know that's not – it's kind of a cop-out. If you're going to force me to pick who wins, I would say Rowan and Harper win and Daniel Bryan turns on Roman before he gets the three count. So there's my prediction. But this is all about the turn of Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Like you, I would say that Rowan and Harper probably win if we were going to put a concrete prediction on here. But I would be excited to see a Bryan and Roman program because I think the only time they've ever gone one-on-one was at Roadblock in 2015 or 16, if I were to take a stab at it. And I think it would be a fresh new storyline, especially for Roman Reigns, who has been pretty bland for the most part, but lately has been not too bad in terms of his pure character. I would like to see a stable with Bryan leading Harper and Rowan. We've mentioned before that heels are always much more effective when they are part of stables. But yeah, I think that either way that the payoff for this match is going to be really good for WWE moving forward.
No doubt. No doubt. I'm looking forward to this Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan match as the people have just kind of taken Daniel Bryan at face value that he had nothing to do with it. He doesn't lie. And you know, the fact that Rowan and Harper have been beating down Daniel Bryan has probably really convinced some fans that, oh, well, no way he can be in cahoots with them now. You know, look, they're actually destroying each other and laying in, you know, big, you know, power moves. And Rowan just skull slammed or whatever that weird move is. Apparently he has Superman strength to be able to pick somebody up just by the top of their head and slam them in to a table. So people are, I think, honestly, I don't know if people are really seeing this coming because the sell by all people involved, all characters, has been pretty damn good. I think that Daniel Bryan's going to get some serious heat for this, and it's going to be a long-standing program, one of which I'm looking forward to a lot. So moving here a little bit further to the SmackDown Women's Championship, we have Bayley and we have Charlotte Flair. So Charlotte here playing the babyface, and Bayley playing the I don't even know what. I don't know what you call her, but I'm going to take another breath, and you give me your thoughts on this.
Well, I'm going to go with Bayley here because Charlotte's a 9-time women's champion, and I feel like for her to reach the double-digit plateau, it will be on a bigger stage than Hell in a Cell in a program that hasn't had much build. It seems like they were just kind of forced together because the other half of the horsewomen have been thrown together on Raw. So I would expect another non-clean finish here between Charlotte and Bayley, and for Bayley to keep the title. I'm hoping that it isn't too long down the road where Bayley drops it, or if maybe she could just expand her character a bit more than a twisted version of her old character. But for Charlotte to win her 10th women's championship, I don't think this is quite the stage for her to do that.
No, it's not. I'm still on board for Bayley being SmackDown Women's Champion. I just need her to commit to the role. They're not committing her to the role. I don't know why they aren't, and I know that I'm repeating myself, but Bayley continues to just be this kind of tweener. I'm not a fan of tweeners. Like, give me a solid role that you're playing and not have me just kind of decide where I want you to be. You tell me where I'm supposed to feel, and I'll let you know if I feel that way. But she's very, very gray. I don't like gray. I think Bayley should be full-fledged heel, not only because she's aligned with Sasha, but because I am so beyond over the side ponytail, wacky waving inflatable tube men, I'm a hugger, terrible persona that they have brought her over with since day one. I know that it was a success in NXT, and they were not able to successfully translate that to the main roster. But Bayley has been begging for a heel turn, and just to have her turn nasty, I think there's a lot that you can do with that. And she's with Sasha, who is a very well-defined heel. Why do you have a quasi kind of hybrid heel with you? This makes no sense. But I would like to see Bayley retain here by cheating. Last month we saw her escape through the ropes and she fled the building after she got the cheap three count. I want the same thing here. I want Bayley to use any means necessary to win this match, and I want her to do it in a very nasty way that gets people pissed off, and it just slowly evolves her into the dark side.
Yeah, like I'd be fully on board to see her start completely ridding herself of her old character. And I just hope that eventually that she does away with it 100%. Because I feel like Bayley has a lot to offer in terms of her in-ring ability, and she could put further development into a newer character of completely on the dark side. I think that the problem with Bayley is that she's been so stale for so long that people don't even want to give her the chance. And the only way for her to get over with the crowd would be to have a completely new, fresh start. And I think the opportunity is prime for her because, as I mentioned, I don't think the timing is right to put the belt back on Charlotte. So for Bayley, for the WWE as a whole, I think it would just be a prime opportunity here to push Bayley farther into the dark side and cement her as a legitimately heel champion and get the crowd back on her side at the same time.
Yeah, there's no better time right now. And then maybe have her come out and cut a promo next Friday on SmackDown saying, "What is wrong with you people? If you had something like this, wouldn't you do anything to keep it?" And just have her slowly evolve into the fans are the enemy. I'm fine with that if I start to see some evolution and evidence of progress. But I'm not seeing any evidence of progress over the last couple of weeks. It's just kind of business as usual. I'm with Sasha, so that I guess makes me a heel. But nothing about me is different. Not my entrance music, not my entrance itself, not my attire. Nothing is different. So they just need to do some work. Move her somewhere, and that somewhere should be straight into darkness, because I would love to see a heel Bayley. So moving further down here with SmackDown and their side of this pay-per-view, the Revival versus the New Day. Yeah, this is a thing. I'll give my quick thoughts. I mean, I think that right now the Revival should retain. I do not need to see the New Day as champion. Nobody needs to see the New Day as tag team champions. They don't need the belts at this point. They are a team that is all about having fun, and they're over without the belts, and people still love them. I don't know why, but people still are in love with the New Day. All their inside jokes and off-script sayings and their wacky pancakes, all the cartoonish stuff that wouldn't entertain my 1.5-year-old son. I just think that the Revival are the ones that need the belts. The thing is, if the Revival keep the belts, I want them to keep the belts for a reason, in order to progress them as characters and give them a mic, give them a voice. I think that's what's hurting this team, is that they don't have time to express to the fans and who and what they are. Their mic time is so few and far between, it's ultimately making them feel very bland. In a team that is extremely good inside the ring and fundamentally sound, it just doesn't feel like they're doing a whole lot with them, so they feel bland, I'll admit it. But right now, the Revival should be the ones to keep it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The New Day right now, where, to be honest, I like the New Day, but only Xavier and Big E. Maybe that's a product of Kofi's lackluster title run. But as of right now, I don't see a place for the New Day in the tag team title picture on SmackDown. As you mentioned, the Revival are excellent in the ring, but just need a bit more spotlight and mic time. I think that they're a good option to lead SmackDown in this new direction as they just move to Fox. I think that they have a lot of, freshness to their characters, as the New Day has been together for, 5 years now. I would love to see some matchups with the Revival moving forward as tag team champions. So it just makes no sense on any level right now to take the belts off them and halt their momentum. You know, we saw that a few times when they won the Raw tag team titles, where they won them and then lost them out of the blue, not view. But we saw it most recently this summer when they dropped it to, I believe it was the OC in that random triple threat tag team match. So I don't want to see that again with the Revival. I want to see them get a legitimate run here with the tag team titles on SmackDown. And I don't see a way that they could logically drop it to the New Day.
I don't either. And the thing is, and I know I just trashed the New Day, and maybe it is a byproduct of Kofi being champion and associating that championship with that act. It's been a very successful act. I cannot deny it. And at times I've been very entertained by them. It was a very long, successful run. But I think that having the championship, the most prestigious belt, what everybody's supposed to be there fighting for, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for, they're putting in a comedy group. I think maybe that's why I have such, I'm harboring very, very unresolved feelings and negative feelings for that group is probably because of that. But with that being said, I think that I'm going to move on to the next match here. And I think the final match, and boy, if there was ever a kickoff match, here it is. And unfortunately, I'm not going to say that because I want this to be the kickoff. I'm saying this because it's probably going to be involved in the kickoff match and the kickoff show is the Intercontinental Championship of Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ali. What are your thoughts on this? Does it make the pre-show? Does it make the main show? And who wins?
I assume that Shinsuke Nakamura will retain the title here just for the lack of the build to the match. It's a shame that it's gotten to this point with the Intercontinental Championship, but at this point, if with such a lack of a build, you would have to assume that the champion retains just for that reason alone.
Yep. I mean, I expect, you know what, though? This could be a match that's a bit of a sleeper. Could it be the match of the night? I don't think so, because they're probably only going to get 10 minutes or less. But I think that they could, as Jim Ross always says, maximize their minutes here. They could take that 10 minutes that they get and show management, hey, this is your bad for not putting me on the main card. Look what we can do. And I think that they need to look at that as that opportunity. They need to both get together and make this as good as they possibly can and not, you know, hang their heads and go, oh, it's the pre-show, so it doesn't really matter. The bar's not set that high. I think that both guys should be motivated and probably will be motivated, especially Ali, who is throwing his body in caution to the wind every week. And, you know, some of the bumps he's taken and outside, my God, I'm surprised he's not re-injured in some of the things he's done the last couple of weeks. And I respect that, but, I mean, sometimes, boy, it just looks very cringeworthy in a way that makes me concerned about his health. But I think these two could put on a hell of a match. They just have to be motivated, and they have to be given the amount of time to do it. Ultimately, so my prediction would be that Shinsuke retains. I think that's kind of a slam dunk. I'm enjoying Sami Zayn as his spokesperson going completely over the top in his entrances. I love that. I love that Sami Zayn is a part of this. It's starting to evolve into something that I'm enjoying and looking forward to every week. As long as Sammy gets mic time, that to me is key here. I don't need just Sammy following him around, you know, aimlessly as a disciple. I need Sami Zayn on the mic being arrogant, obnoxious, and annoying. That's what Sami Zayn does best. I love it when he's on the mic. So I expect Sami to be interfering here in Shinsuke's favor, causing a distraction, pulling a leg, something along that of those lines, and boom, Kinshasa, and off we go to Shinsuke retaining the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and I said it on our show when they first aligned, where if Sammy cannot be a legit contender to a title, I'd rather have him as just a disciple to Nakamura or a mouthpiece as an annoying heel than nothing at all. I think he's excelled in this role. I think that Nakamura's character has been portrayed better with Sami Zayn at his side. It's no secret that there was a bit of a language barrier with Nakamura when he was solo. So Sami Zayn has completely added to his character. And, you know, I like Ali. I think that he's fantastic in the ring. His character's not too bad. But it's just not the time, it's not the place to take the belt off of Nakamura, especially when he's just starting to get some traction with Sami Zayn at his side.
No, it's just not time. That's just it. I mean, it would make zero sense for Ali to become champion right now. It would not do any favors for him. It would make the whole thing with Nakamura and Sami Zayn look like it was all for naught. It is just this to me. I'm not advocating for people to put money on matches. I don't know why I'm going down that road this time, because I've actually like thought about it and I'm like, I can make some serious money here. But this would be a match, if you're thinking about it, I'd probably put a small amount on this, that Shinsuke is the one who's going to retain, just because it makes zero sense for Ali other than the shock factor. It would not be the right thing to do. So, well, I think we've covered the full card. It doesn't look like there's a hell of a lot of matches on this, which tells me that the matches they do have are probably going to be relatively lengthy.
Yeah, well, like, I would assume that that's what they're going to go with it, because there have been a lot of pay-per-views as of late where they've just kind of, like, filled it in as if everyone needs a participation medal. And I've always preferred pay-per-views when they just invest more time in storyline into the marquee matchups. I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that SmackDown's premiere on Fox just passed us. Obviously, there's the WWE Championship match, that which would otherwise probably would have happened on Hell in a Cell, the ladder match between KO and Shane McMahon. But I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing for WWE. As I just mentioned, a lot of times they just stuff the match with matches that kind of just fill up the card with hot air.
And that's exactly what it is, and that's what most pay-per-views feel like, and it certainly feels WrestleMania is probably the biggest charity pay-per-view of them all, when it should be the complete opposite of them all, when it's just the elite of the elite, the best of the best get put on the card, and not everybody gets a trophy for just participating. I can't stand that. It's nothing more than just to lengthen the show so WWE can, and I've gone through this, WWE can just say to their stockholders and shareholders, look at all how much and how long people are watching every event, and it just artificially inflates the number of hours people are watching the network. There is a money factor here, and there's an agenda when they do that, and it's to make their network numbers go up, and that's simply what it is. And I think there's negative return to the having more here, and they think sometimes more is less, and there is that's certainly not the case. But hey, I'm all for longer matches if there's fewer of them. That makes me able to invest in a match long. There's more time for me to care about a match that's happening, rather than like, oh wow, there's still eight matches and there's only an hour and a half left. How the hell are they going to do that? I don't like to think like that. So, well, I think we've covered it all. Is there anything that any final thoughts on Hell in a Cell? Things that we didn't cover, maybe who could show up, or on SmackDown on Friday?
No, I think that Hell in a Cell is going to be pretty much what we see here. There's not going to be anything swervy, if you would, that may come about. So, yeah, I think we pretty much covered it top to bottom.
Awesome. Well, I think the next time we talk, I got to get the Crown Jewel pay-per-view date, but it seems like we are on the pay-per-view schedule here of WWE, but if it's not every 3 weeks and it's an off week, then maybe we won't have a pay-per-view to predict. But yeah, so the next one that we will be discussing will be Crown Jewel, and I'm sure that one will have a very interesting card, as it always does with these fantasy matchups that the Prince likes to put together with all the money he has.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that he always throws as much money as possible at WWE to try and bring back these big names to present these marquee matchups. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of these events in Saudi Arabia. If it is called Crown Jewel, then sure, I'll go with it. But I think that it's just going to be a card that is probably just a glorified house show with no substance really to the storylines.
Yep, that's exactly what it's going to be, and it's unfortunate. And like I've said, you know, multiple times before, apparently this is a contract that is 10 events long, and we've gone through three or four, so we are not even halfway done with the Saudi Arabia nonsense. So people can complain all they want about Saudi Arabia, but unfortunately it's here to stay for a while, and so just let that sink in for a bit. But all right, Anthony, well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you as always, and go Canadians. And before you go, though, let everyone know how they can follow you, where they can find you.
Oh, well, you can follow me on Twitter at ADeMarco25, and I always say this, I hope you like hockey before hitting that follow button.
That's your disclaimer. It's very true. And look, I am not a hockey aficionado, but I do enjoy watching it when it's on. And I don't have really a dog in the fight. I guess by default, I'm probably a Rangers fan if you put a gun to my head, just because I'm from here. But honestly, I mean, I don't dislike any of the Canadians. I think that the Canadians are, I mean, didn't they make the playoffs last year? They made them, right?
No, last year the Canadians did make the playoffs. But, you know, I'm like one of those weird guys from Montreal who does not like the Montreal Canadiens. I actually root for an American team in the Philadelphia Flyers. So that's why I'm hated around these parts.
All right, well, your secret is safe with me, but I can't promise you anything that I don't have any listeners up in Montreal, so I won't disclose your name or address or anything like that. So that's all right. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the show, and we will talk soon.
All right, Matt, you take care now.
You too.
Bye. Bye.